Good morning and welcome to the initial offering of the Quasi Smith on the Campaign Trail podcast. My name is Kathleen Harris. I'll be your host for today. And we are here with the one and only Quasi Smith. How are you today, sir?
That sounded very official. The one and only. I'm well. How are you? It's good to see you again, albeit I saw you yesterday. But it's good to see you. It's been a good day.
Good. So we'd like to get into why we are here today, which is to introduce you to the podcast world. So can you give us a few moments about who is Quasi Smith?
Oh, that's a big question. I am my mother's child. I would say that I'm just a normal guy. Oftentimes it's just regular old folks that do the, you know, what's perceived as the greatest things. Was born and raised out in the desert, you know, out in Blythe, California, which is borders Arizona for folks that don't know where that is. It's the easternmost city in California. It literally sits on the California-Arizona border. And it's a very small, conservative town. And you got that small town vibe. I think growing up, I think they used to say that the town was literally 4 square miles. We had 4 stoplights in the whole town. One high school, one middle school, and it's still that way to this day. One high school, one middle school, maybe a few elementary schools. The police department may have had 8 or 10 officers back on the day. I mean, this is like, it was the country, the desert, you know, some parts the ghetto, all at the same time. And it made for a pretty different upbringing. You know, one department store, Kmart, that was it. We didn't have Walmart, any of those other guys. It was Kmart, and it's closed now. And so a small town guy, a rural fella, waking up, and I tell folks this all the time, there's nothing like waking up to the smell of wet alfalfa fields after, you know, it's been irrigated or rain and crop dusters, you know, spraying pesticide and all of that stuff. It was a country living. And so living in a big city now, you know, makes quite a bit of difference. But just I think a lot of my story mirrors the story of a lot of Americans. I don't necessarily know that I'm that different in that regard. Everyone has a story and how they got to where they are, and very humble beginnings. Very humble beginnings.
Okay, and so let's move into your biography. You have an illustrious biography, I may say, and this is all leading to your run for a congressional seat. So why don't you take us through your professional life and perhaps your church life as well, because it all leads up to where we are at this moment.
Sure. I like I said, being raised in that small town, I had troubles in high school. My father died when I was 11 years old, 1988, November 7th, 1988. That's the day that's ingrained in my head. Years later, I'm a little older now. I tell people I'm 28 plus shipping and handling. At this point, it's shipping, handling, taxes, and fees now. But it's a date that's still ingrained in my head. I remember the funeral service, it plays over in my head, November 7th, well, the funeral's on the 21st. Every year, it still plays over, and it's amazing, you know, so many years later, it's still etched in my head. But we were left. My father had sickle cell anemia, and for those in the medical profession, they understand what that is. It's a very difficult disease to deal with. Back then, in 1988, there was a vast amount of treatment drugs, especially when they were having what they refer to as pain crisis. And I remember my father having those things, and it's horrible to watch. If you never had to watch a loved one die, it's painful. It's still painful 30 plus years later. It still hurts to watch someone expire. A father, a young man, to watch his father expire. And I remember the drugs and the treatments were so bad back then that, you know, people resorted to street drugs and everything. My father was no exception to that. And so he ended up passing away at the age of when I was 11 years old. He was in his 30s at the time. And it left us with a single mom. raising four children on her own, the welfare, food stamps, social services. That's what we lived off of, WIC, government commodities. That's what I was raised on. I didn't own a pair of name brand pair of tennis shoes until I was a senior in high school. It was a pair of British Knights. For all of the people over 40, understand exactly what I'm talking about. Back in L.A. Gears and British Knights. My mom used to take my brother's pants that had holes in them, cut them off, make them shorts, hem up the bottom of them, and they were a brand new pair of shorts to me. Those were the begins. We didn't have a car. Only thing we had was hope and a settled voice from a mother that made us believe that anything was possible and that the world would present to us great things. I think I was battling depression then. I hindsight 2020, I can say I was battling depression and didn't know it. And I say this, and you asked a very pointed question. I'm, you know, as a lawyer, I could, you know, answer the question, but you asked what, you know, about the resume and the professor. Never mind the degrees. This is the resume. That's the resume. It's people like to flash the parts where people would seemingly call them successful. But if it had not been for standing out there on Main Street in Blythe, California, in a line to get commodities, powdered milk, and government cheese and pork in a can, I wouldn't be sitting in a high rise on Central Avenue in the fifth largest city in the country. So I want to make sure that everybody, this is just who I am, and I don't exclude that from the resume. That's the part of who I am. And standing in that line on Main Street waiting to get commodities in a plastic bag to take home for my mom to cook food is as important to me as when I raised my hand at 18 years old and swore to defend the Constitution of the United States as a young Marine. That's as much as a part of the story. I had trouble in high school. I think I was battling depression. I didn't realize it because, you know, you resort to what's safe. And to, for me, it was, you know, being the class clown. I had a particular math teacher. She would write up my referral slip and set it on her desk because she knew before class was over I was going to do something stupid and get kicked out of class. She was right most of the time. I was a handful to deal with that. We had, this past Saturday, you got a chance to meet her. We bumped into my first grade teacher. She showed up to one of the campaign events, Miss Duval.
We did.
What a sweet, dear soul. And just to see the look on her face, to see one of her young students, you know, running for the United States Congress now, successfully running for the United States Congress. This is the American story. I nearly failed out of high school. I graduated with, I think, on a weighted scale, it was 1.9 grade point average. Matter of fact, I don't think they graduated. I think they put me out, and they just got tired of dealing with me. And I had no choice but to figure something out, and the United States Marine Corps took me. And God bless the Marine Corps. I'm a Marine way down on the inside still, and to all of my servicemen and women. Semper Fi to all of you Marines, and thank you all for your service. That's the heartbeat of this nation, our people that put it all on the line away from their families. The Marine Corps opened doors for me that I would have never otherwise been able to walk through. I was able to have a successful military career. In fact, it was General Stephen Cheney. He was a colonel at the time in San Diego. I'd done some audit and stuff. I got awarded a Navy Achievement Medal and whatnot. And he asked me, what do you want to do? I said, I want to go to school. He said, how were your grades in high school? I kind of stood there in front of him with tears in my eyes because I knew I didn't cut the mustard in high school. General Cheney told me to apply for this program, made some phone calls. It's called BOOST, the Broaden Opportunity for Officer Selection Training. And it was a pipeline into MESEP, the Marine Enlisted Commissioning Education Program. I applied for the program. I got in. I didn't get in because of my grades. I got in because of my story, because they understood we have to give this young man a chance. He's done good since he's been in the Marine Corps, promoted meritoriously multiple times. Let's give him a chance to go to school. I was admitted into the BOOST program. They shipped us off to Newport, Rhode Island, a bunch of Marines and sailors at NTC, Rhode Island, and it was there. They sent us to a year prep school before sending us to college. Everybody from that place, you either went to the Naval Academy or to a university of your choice. I was going to go to the Naval Academy at first, but because I wanted to be a doctor, a medical doctor. But they told me I couldn't be a doctor and stay in the Marine Corps. I would have had to convert to the Navy. Absolutely not. I'm a United States Marine. That's what I said. This is no slight to my Navy friends and my Navy brothers and sisters. And yes, we're part of the Department of the Navy, but I'm a Marine, a United States Marine, a proud United States Marine. So I said, no, we're going to try another career field. I still love medicine to this day, but no, I wasn't taking off my dress blues to put on my Navy whites. I wasn't going to do that. I'm a Marine. You hear me? A Marine. So I stayed in. I ended up going back to San Diego State, and that's where my education started. From then, you bounce around. I got some injuries in the military and whatnot, and ended up out of the military right before 9/11. In fact, I remember when 9/11 happened, I was downtown Denver in the courthouse. I think I was down there for something about a ticket or something I had gotten or something, but I was downtown in the courthouse. That's just the truth. You know what I mean? I think it was like a cracked window or something. It was something simple. And I was down there and I started seeing the news flash across the screen about 9/11. And they had military and folks rushed into downtown Denver. There's a Federal Reserve there and all of that stuff. And I remember leaving there and going straight to the recruiting station because I knew something was wrong. And I forget whoever the staff sergeant was. I said, I just got out. I'm 3 months out. Sign me up. Whoever this Osama bin Laden guy is, give me about 12 Marines and I'll go find this joker right now. We can put an end. I'll never forget going straight to the recruiting station. And they told me, Sergeant Smith, that's not how it works. And I was standing there with tears in my eyes. Who has done this to us? Of course, they said, Marine, we got to get orders, from the thing. And, if we need to do that, we'll do it. And that was just a recruiter talking. Obviously, there's a process. But every person that has taken up arms for this country felt that same way in that moment. Let's whoop it on. We can go find these guys and put an end to this. I couldn't get in the Marine Corps that day. So I went home and prayed, because I was worried about the nation. From then, we all know what happened with that. I ended up going to school, finishing my degree. So Bachelor's in Criminal Justice Management. I had my theological education. I've always served in ministry. I've been serving in ministry 20 plus years, long time. I ended up getting my secular degrees, Criminal Justice Management. Went on back home to Blythe to serve as a police officer there, graduated Police Academy number one from the Riverside County Sheriff's Department right there, Ben Clark in Riverside, California. Could have went other places. I was a class president. I graduated number one. I think out of all of the test questions, I think I missed two out of all of the test questions the whole time Academy was going on. I highlight that to say people need the opportunity to turn things around. I was one of those ones that was able to do it. Graduated Academy, went there, went back to Blythe, worked as a police officer, had a great career there. Went from there to the United States EEOC, served as a federal investigator, investigating employment law violations for the ADA, Title VII, ADEA, whatnot. I was going to law school while I was doing that, so I'd go to work at 6 in the morning, get out at 2, be in my seat at 2:25 for law school class, get out of class at 10 o'clock at night. I did that every day, Monday through Friday, for 3.5 years, believe it or not, just to get to through law school. I didn't have the same opportunity that everybody else had. By then, I had a wife and children, and so it wasn't a matter of jumping up and quitting and going to law school like a 22-year-old could do. I had obligations. I was pastoring a church at the time, and I never let any of my duties fall to the ground. I kept pastoring. I kept taking care of my family. I took care of my job, and I went to school. I didn't step foot in a movie theater or bowling alley or nothing because there was a work that needed to be done. Hindsight 2020, I graduated law school. Couldn't find a job after that for a number of reasons, which, of course, we can talk about all that stuff later. There's some concern there. However, even with the resume, everything's not going to go your way. And I had $763 to my name and hope that my mom gave me. Hope and belief in the promise of the nation. And I went and started a law firm. And years later, we've fared well. We've been fortunate. And now here I am today with the resume, all of it, not just the high points, but the low points too. And it's been a ride.
It sure has.
It's been a ride.
Thank you for all of that. And there's a lot to unpack there. So we know the high points of your resume, and you've touched on them before. Forever Marine, and thank you for your service. Former police officer in your hometown, bishop in your church, and lawyer, of course, and business owner, a law firm owner. And so we can chop all of that up and be able to speak to each of those segments in future podcasts. Sure. But for now, I would like for you to speak about your current endeavor, which is running for the United States Congress in the 9th District of Arizona.
Sure. So I I'm still in awe of how I wound up in this place. In the sense that when the nation calls for leadership, and it is right now, there's always been brave men and women that have answered, from our firefighters and police officers, our military men and women, our civil service folks, everyday first responders, folks that do jobs that everyday folks don't want to do. The sanitation guy that picks up your garbage after you had your Super Bowl party. Go 49ers. So, I'm a 49er fan. Please root for the 49ers. There are folks that do jobs like that that we wouldn't otherwise want to do. Believe it or not, I got into the space of contemplating running for Congress. Believe it or not, because one of my law school professors, Professor Pease Wingenter, a wonderful, intelligent lawyer, a great professor, no nonsense. She was scary walking into her class. She was my criminal law professor. And unbeknownst to me, we lived out in the same area. And this is years after law school was over. I'd been a practicing attorney for years by then. She reached out and she said, I've been following you. And have you considered running for Congress? You know, Mr. Gosar in our district, you know, he ran unopposed last year, and we need someone that can win the race, someone that's, you know, balanced. He went down the list of reasons and whatnot. And Professor Pease Wingenter stayed on me regarding considering running for Congress. And I told her I didn't know. She kind of walked me up to the line, but let me make my own decision concerning it. And it was through counsel and, you know, with my family and loved ones, my mom, of course, my children, my wife, Tiffany, you know, I spoke with my bishop about it, pastor, you know, religious advisors about it, and, you know, determined that the nation has called for leadership. The nation is groaning for leadership. Even what we've experienced just over the last couple of days in our politics, there's a void of leadership. People that will do the right thing for the right reasons without any selfish ambitions, forward-thinking, forward-looking folks that know how to come to the table of meeting and reason and advance the cause of the people and the purpose of the nation, that can get away from the partisan divisions of extremism that have rooted themselves in our politics and get back to pursuing as the Constitution and our establishing documents and the Declaration of Independence espouses a more perfect union. It's not perfect yet, but it's more perfect than it was. And we have to keep pursuing to make sure that it's perfected every day. And so when I threw my name in the ring, for lack of better words, you know, it was a little, you know, kind of like, okay, let's see how this works. And now we're in the thick of it, you know. And I do believe we'll be successful. It's necessary for the sake of the people. And so here I am running for the United States Congress, the most unlikely candidate or person, I should say, to be sitting here, but the better choice as a candidate, the clear better choice as a candidate, and that has a heart for service and a life of service. And so here I am. I'm excited about it. We are making strides that I couldn't have even imagined making. The support from both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats and independents alike, has been literally shocking. The people are looking for a better choice. And I'm humbled and excited all at the same time, you know, to be here. Sacrifices are great, but that's what we do. We sacrifice for the greater good.
So let's set the table about the election itself and where you are running. Can you talk about the district? It is a wide district. It's actually the second largest district in the state, congressionally speaking. And so let's talk about the different geographical areas. And let's also let folks know that Election Day is November 5th. Of this year. For those who don't follow politics as closely as we do, we actually need to sort of get back to basics.
Absolutely. Yeah, so Arizona's 9th congressional district, first of all, the congressional, I'm running for a congressional seat, so that would be in the United States Congress. It's not in the state house. It's in, it would be in Washington. Okay. My district that I'm running in, it's the district that I live in, so it's not some of these games that other folks play. I'm going to run in this district, and if I win, I'm going to move there. I think that's not play games. Let's let the people that live in the district, that care about the district, let's let them run, and you go run in the district that you live in, and let's keep the lines clear. I live in the 9th Congressional, have lived there for years, was born and raised in Blythe, California, in Blythe, California, right on the edge of that district. So that's not uncommon to me. The district runs literally the western border of Arizona, all the way from Mexico down in the south to Utah and touches, I think, Colorado or something way up in the north. It's way up there. There's places that I haven't even seen. It's hundreds of miles long and wide. Has some larger cities in the district, and then some completely rural areas. Some of the larger cities that fall within the parameter of the district, Goodyear, Buckeye, Arizona, which is one of the fastest growing cities and areas in the whole nation, is all of it's in that district. Surprise, fast growing city, not only in the state, in the nation. Lake Havasu, Kingman, Mojave, County, Bullhead City, Yuma. These are all in the western part of the state, some of the most rapid growing areas of the state. They're all in that district. And you have smaller communities like Wickenburg, Ehrenberg, Quartzsite, you know, where there's 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people. So you have a very dynamic district, I should say, in the sense that you have large inner city folks, but then you have small rural towns and rural communities that have needs. And so you have this balance that every political candidate has to have out in that area. But it is a very vast district. It is a very diverse district. And it's very, very diverse in a number of ways. And I could say more about that. I'm sure we'll get into it later on, but that's where the district lies. It is in Arizona, and it borders California and a lot of the other states around there.
So we've talked about a lot of your background, and we would be remiss if we didn't talk about your family life as well. You have a beautiful wife and 8 children, if I'm not mistaken, and some grandchildren as well. So please talk about that.
Yeah, blessed to be espoused to, I think, one of the most wonderful, well, I know the, you gotta be the most wonderful person on planet Earth, and that's Tiffany. She gets me, and she's got me. She's amazing. And it's been amazing. It's been all up. All wins, no losses. Since we've married each other, we have a blended family. That's where the 8 children come from. We were both previously married, and we both to this day maintain wonderful relationships with our former spouses and stuff. We have a legitimate blended family that functions and functions well. In fact, her former husband, the father of two of my children, and we don't use steps and all that stuff. They're just my kids, you know. We often joke their biological father and I, their father and I, we say we have kids together. That's what we tell each other, because a lot of times, you know, there's not that division there. But that's where the 8 children come from. When we got married, I had 5 children. She had 2. And then we had one, the baby Jericho, together, who is a little live wire himself. My oldest son has two children, our grandchildren, and it is wonderful. My family's my, that's the fuel in my tank. I do what I do for them. It's an always a blessing to know that my children were raised by the same principles, but not under the on the same premises that I was raised under. They've had a life. Things are supposed to get better as this American dream plays out. And I'm grateful to say that my kids have been not only raised well, they've grown up to be contributing members of society, and the ones that aren't, you know, that are still growing up and in school and whatnot. It's been good, and they are the reason I do what I do. You know, my girls and my boys, I love them.
Absolutely. And so let's get into the issues a little bit, because this election is no doubt, as you have mentioned before, going to be a stress test for the nation.
Sure.
And the premier issue that we are talking about on the campaign trail is democracy itself. But there are a lot of concerns that voters have, issues that are being widely talked about in this election cycle. And I'm sure we'll unpack these as these episodes proceed. But let's just touch on a few that you'd like to mention today.
Well, I think that before you can deal with these issues, and I'm talking about these issues are issues that surround politics and policy. This nation has to grapple with the issue, and it's singular. And that is that there are people in Washington on both sides, and I unashamedly say it, and because I'm not beholden to, you know, I'm not signing no voucher to or no contract to support something that's wrong. I don't care whether it's from the Democrat or Republican or independent. Right is right and wrong is wrong. And there are people on both sides of the aisle that do not need to be in Washington. They don't represent the nation, the majority of the nation. And we have our systems in place and whatnot. But before we can get to these issues, we have to deal with the issue. And the issue is we have to send people to Washington of the character. You're not going to find any perfect candidate. I'm not a perfect candidate. None of us are perfect. But there are certain threshold things that we cannot bypass for political expediency. Things like decency, respect, the ability to get along and work with other people, the ability to work within the framework of the law and not feel like anyone is above the law. Someone that has the common decency to understand that if you stop putting wood on the fire will go out. And Democratic hands hasn't been clean in putting wood on the fire. Republican hands haven't been clean in putting wood on the fire. And we're about to torch or burn down a nation because of these political divides that are unnecessary, and the sole focus of them is for a political game. And I believe that Congress has not been for years now doing the business of the people. That's what the representatives in that House are supposed to do. They're supposed to handle the business of the people. And when you put party above the politics and the business of the people, when you put a person above the party, you've run into some dangerous territory. And if we don't fix the issue, those grandchildren that I love that I was just talking about might not have a country to come back to. We are at a place of, well, I should say on the precipice of political unrest. The people are weary. The people are tired. And when you get people, once they become wearied and tired by the state of politics, a couple of things happen. One, they get disinterested to where they stop paying attention, and that's where corruption and when I say corruption, I'm talking overt corruption starts to take hold, and you end up with dictatorships, autocrats and things along those lines. You end up with all of this type of stuff that this nation is not founded on. America is the greatest nation on planet Earth. That's just my personal opinion and belief. It's a great nation. It has been a great nation. It doesn't matter who's been in the White House. It's great because of the people. It's great because of the principles. It's great because of the practices that have been espoused as a result of that principle. But when you're in this place that we've been in politically for the last several years, you're running into tide where the people are either going to turn a deaf ear to it and not pay attention, and it gives the opportunity for corruption to set in, or you inflame the passions of people with misinformation, twisted information or whatnot, to where now folks are turning against each other and you end up in a place of political unrest on the precipice of civil war and other things. And I think the biggest thing that we have not realized about this nation is that we can lose it. That's the threat. We can lose it. There is an absolute issue at that border down there. And when I'm elected to Congress, I'm going to put a bill on the day one, if they haven't already done it, which they should have did it yesterday. Secure that border and let's address immigration reform. But beyond that, if you never mind the border, our biggest issues is not what's coming across the border. It's what's already over here. And I'm not talking about folks that are undocumented. I'm talking about folks that are indecent. They're just not decent. They're not, and they're not doing the business. And unfortunately, it's our politicians and the people that we at one point call leaders. If I have a congressman or a president or a senator, a governor, that I don't want to and will not introduce my six-year-old son to, I have a problem. If my congressman was at Starbucks around the corner from my house and they say, hey, come meet the congressman, I would drive the other way down the road and go to the Starbucks at Fry's, because there's nothing about you that I want my six-year-old to know. Nothing. You can't hang out with white supremacists and expect decent people, not just black folks, not just black, I'm talking about people of all, that this is not who we are. We've fought wars about that in this country. In the 50s through the Civil Rights Movement, people have died about that. And for you in 2021, 2, 3, 4, to stir the pot, espouse, go to that. Never mind the issues. We can talk about, you know, voting rights and all this other stuff. Let's deal with the issue. Sir, you don't need to be in that space. And if they don't have the decency to sit themselves down, it's on the people to send them home. And so when you ask a question about the issues, I want to be abundantly clear. My race for Congress, while we will address these issues, I'm here to address the issue. And that is, in my district, I believe, along with hundreds of thousands of other voters in that district, that are, as it relates to our congressional seat, the issue is the person that's there doesn't need to be there. Once we address that issue, then we have conversation about these other issues, which are important as well. But that's the primary issue, and it's not just in our district. It's across the country.
So the office holder that you are running against, and we can talk about him further, sure, because he probably requires a separate episode himself. Sure. But just to let folks listening know, it is Representative Paul Gosar.
Yes.
He has been in office since 2010. This is his seventh term. And your tagline for your congressional run is a better choice. So can you explain to us why you feel that you're a better choice for this district?
Absolutely. And when I say it is for the district, I'm a better choice for the Democrat. I mean, why? Because you can't have some Democrat. Let me say it this way. You don't defeat extremism with extremism. That's a recipe for disaster, and you only hurt the people. You only hurt the people. So you can't bring in an extremist to defeat a Paul Gosar, which I believe. These are my personal opinions. And again, I live in this district, so I have a right to have a strong opinion. I'm not a transplant candidate. He's been my representative the last 2 years, and I've been embarrassed the whole time. Okay, I want to be clear about that. I want to mince my words about it's nothing personal. I don't want to have any conversation about his personal life, his personal issues, what people say about his health. None of those things are important to me. What's important to me is, sir, what you have done since you've been there, you have been an embarrassment to me and my neighbors and the constituents of that district. I know it's kind of little casual language, but we don't roll like that. That not as a nation. That's just not who we are as a people, as a lawyer, someone that litigates. This is way beneath the pale of what's expected of a congressional representative. And so with that being said, it's Mr. Gosar has been there for some time, and he is a problem. Has been a problem that needs to be removed. And one of the goals of the campaign is to show the people on both sides that there is a better choice. I'm a better choice for the Democrat because I'm not an extremist. I want to be clear up front. And if me telling the truth causes you not to be, then so be it. It is what it is. But they say we're gonna stand on business and stand on the truth, and let's go do the business of the people. That's the way it is. We're not going extreme left, and we're not gonna go espouse extreme right. The majority of us Americans are in the middle. There are things that we can agree on and we want to agree on. And so I'm a better choice for the Democrat. I'm a better choice for the independent, which is the largest voting bloc in this country, because I'm right where you are. Even though I'm a registered Democrat, and no, I'm not switching parties and doing all of that stuff for political expediency. I think we have to stand on business and stand on truth. I'm a Democrat. I just happen to be a very moderate Democrat. I think the rest of us are in the middle of the road, and I think I'm where the majority of Americans are. Here's the kicker, though. I'm a better choice for the Republican at this point, because there are a lot of Republican voters, some listening and watching this podcast right now, that feel the same way. While they are conservative in their principles and in their values, and we can't demonize that. It's nothing wrong with being a Republican. Some of the people I love the most are Republicans. Some of them voted for President Trump. Some of them, you know, there's nothing wrong with being. Only thing, the problem with the Republican Party, in my opinion, I think it's been hijacked by extremists. We need the Republican Party back that needs to be there, because iron sharpens iron. And the only way you get rid of the strongholds is you got to put out the bad guys so that they can get back the party to where it needs to be, because as a nation, we need the Republican Party. I want to be clear about it. We need the other party, but we need the other party the right way. We need the Democratic Party, but we need the Democratic Party the right way. And so I firmly believe that, because I've lived the American dream, I get it. Former military, police officer, federal investigator, the ministry, small business owner, bootstraps, ground up, a lawyer, a real one. I'm a better choice for both sides. I don't espouse extremes. I want to come to the middle. This election cycle, I am the better choice for the Republican, so that we can get rid of who doesn't need to be there. Thank him for his service and let him go back to, you know, his family or whatnot. And then 2 years from now, if you feel like, okay, we got another Republican candidate that's going to be a better choice for us, then it's your right to vote for that person. But this election cycle, because the races look clearly between Mr. Gosar and I, I'm the better choice. I'm no harm to the Republican. I don't, you know, and even on the issues. And of course, we'll talk more about those things, you know, as time, you know, goes on. But I believe that. And as we hang out together in these sessions and talk about issues, you'll see that, well, he's no threat to the Republic. He's saying the same thing that most Republicans and citizens across the country believe. And that's why we chose that language. This is as simple as A, B, C, a better choice. And that's what the people need in this election, is a better choice.
Okay. And so let's talk about your journey through this campaign process. So you declared that you were running back in 2023, and you've been going through the months spreading the word about your candidacy. Where have you visited in your district? And just tell us a story or two about people that you've met up with.
Sure. It's been a journey. I'll say this, that my favorite thing is, and I never thought it would be this way, because especially, you know, with the ministry world, the stuff you're in the pulpit and, you know, the people are in the audience and all that other stuff. And sometimes, you know, when there's too many of them, you know, they kind of, all right, shake one or two hands and, you know, go to the back. And then, of course, in the lawyering world, you know, you're not co-mingling with the jury and the folks in the gallery, you know, at the, you know, the courthouse. You got your client, you know, and you leave. But in this world of campaigning for office, my favorite thing to do has been to sit in with voters and listen to their stories and listen to not just what concerns them, but why it concerns them. And I've had the opportunity across the district to sit with Republican voters, independent voters, of course, Democratic voters. And that's why I always emphasize, everybody's saying the same thing. We just got to get people in there that will go legislate based on what people do agree to across party lines. But sitting with these voters and hearing their stories and getting to know them, sitting in their homes with them and hearing of, you know, spouses that have passed on a month or two prior to you showing up at their door, meeting their dogs and cats and hanging out, you know, with them has been the greatest joy of this whole journey. The people. It has been, you know, this stuff is, you know, we do this stuff because it's a part of, you know, marketing and campaigning and stuff. But it's just the everyday people that want to tell you about the difficulties that they're having paying for insulin, paying for medical expenses, Republican gentlemen on the verge of filing bankruptcy because of healthcare issues, and they're veteran. And can you promise me, Mr. Smith, that you'll do something about this? Folks are way out in those rural areas, the vet hospitals downtown, you know, Phoenix, well, Midtown Phoenix, making sure that everybody has resources, people that are caught in the crosshairs between two conflicting policies. And they look at you and say, when you get to Congress, remember me. Don't forget this issue. Make sure you can get this done. Farmers and agricultural workers that really have concern with the water issues that are going out there because it's going to impact them greatly. Folks that are genuinely concerned and desire to secure the border and comprehensive immigration reform. Folks that you know, and the Republicans and Democrats alike, that listen, I'm a law-abiding citizen. I get it that we don't want guns in the hands of, you know, bad folks or folks with mental health issues, but promise me, Mr. Smith, that you're going to protect our Second Amendment rights. My answer to that is, yeah, I don't want your guns. You're a law-abiding citizen. You're not a criminal. You don't have an extensive history of, absolutely, you got a Republican or you got a partner in me. Believe in the Second Amendment. It's in the Constitution. We don't have to have a debate about that. I don't want your guns. You know what I mean? You can pass, you know, background check. You're not, you know, but I want to do everything that's necessary to keep it out of the hands of folks that don't deserve to have it, because us doing that is what actually strengthens our ability to protect your right to have them, and that we won't allow overreach beyond what's necessary. It's that's been the joy of it. And to talk about stuff with folks and you leave the table, different parties, but agree to the same principles. And we've seen that everywhere we've been. Wickenburg, Kingman, Lake Havasu. I think I've been there the most. I love that place. It's close to home too. Ehrenberg, Quartzsite. On the bucket list, there's Yuma's our next stop. And of course, obviously out here in Maricopa County, Buckeye and other places. And we're just getting started. You know, first several months of a campaign is putting together infrastructure and team members. And we're so blessed, obviously, to have you spearheading that team. I think you get gooder and gooder every day at what you do.
Well, thank you.
Every day. And so it's been a journey, and it's going to be a journey. And I think that at the end, think we'll be well, and it'll be for the good of the people.
So let's talk about what you need from the public. So there are usually three aspects of help or assistance that we talk about. Volunteering,
sure.
Donations, and also signing the petition so that you can actually be official on the ballot. So maybe we take that one first since it's our highest priority.
Sure, yeah. That's always the priority. Of course, a candidate cannot be on the ballot, as you know, unless they reach the threshold number of signatures that is required. The Secretary of State, Adrian Fontes, who's a great gentleman. I've been out on the trail with him in a few locations. His office just released those numbers last month. And we're better off than, kind of where we thought we were. You know, we're at the finish line. But in those instances, you don't want to just be at the finish line. You want to go above and beyond. And so I'm not capping myself at the number that is required. Let's do it and let's go all out. And so but signing the petition is critical. You can sign it at the Arizona Secretary of State's website. It doesn't matter which county you live in. Our district covers four different counties: Maricopa, La Paz, Mojave, and Yuma County. All of those voters have access to the ballot through the Arizona Secretary of State's website, or through the petition, I should say. You can equal sign it. The reason why that's the best way to do it, it's because, again, here locally, we have a legislature that tends to do some quirky things to try to exclude names and signatures off the ballot. You know, it depends on who's reviewing the ballot or whether the signature's challenged. I mean, in some instances, if you go a hair outside of the box where, you know, they could try to challenge the signature and whatnot, and for, you know, political gain and expediency and whatnot. But to make sure that that is not an issue, if you go to the website, the Arizona Secretary of State website, and sign the petition there, it's not challengeable because they verify all the information that they need to validate. And so you can do that at the Arizona Secretary of State website, or there's a link to it on our website at QuaySmithForCongress.com. You can go there, click sign the petition. It'll take you right to the Secretary of State's website, and you can do it that way. And so that is the top priority, and it is for every candidate.
And so let's move into number two, which is donations for your campaign. How can they donate? Where can they go?
Absolutely. Of course, the engine that fuels anything, and political campaigns are no different, is donations. You know, and it's not just, you know, the $100 donors or the $1,000 donors, the $5, the $10, the $25 donors. Every cent counts, and every dollar matters to furthering a narrative or a cause for good, rebuilding hope in the hearts of people. It's so necessary, and it's a way you can make a difference. If you don't have the time to invest as a volunteer, if you don't have the time, invest your dime, as they say. You know what I mean? But you know, put some effort into it, and it's something that we all do. I've done it. I donated $1,000 just the other day into somebody, into another committee, but you know, because it's something that we all must do to make sure that we get the nation back to where it needs to be politically. And so in order to donate, of course, we have Act Blue. Just look up my name, Kwesi Smith for Congress. It'll pop up in there somehow. You can visit our website directly, again, www.kwesi.smithforcongress.com. Go there. There's a button up there somewhere on the website that says donate. If you push it, it'll take you right to the porthole. You can become a monthly donor. I think there's a cap at how much someone can donate. You have the primaries. I think it's like $3,200 or $3,300, something like that. And then that's the most you can donate for the primary. Primary ends in August. And then from August to November, you can donate another $3,300. It's going to take all of that and some, because I'm certain the NRA is not going to write me a big check like they might write my partner, because I'm not going to sell out and say that there shouldn't be some reasonable restraints for folks that shouldn't have guns, not the ones that should, that we should protect. But, you know, it's those kinds of things. And I'm okay with it. You know what I mean? Because I believe that the people, you know, I believe the people are going to respond. And it's folks just like the ones watching this. And so visit the website, or go, if you have an ActBlue account, go there. You can mail it into the office. All of that information is on the website, and so I would, you know, invite folks to visit that. But it's going to take all of us. If it's only $5, it's $5. If you have 500, great. Hurry up. We need your help. But I think it's going to all go well if everybody responds.
And then finally, let's talk about the heartbeat of the campaign, which is our volunteers. Sure. They really power us up and make sure that we're able to be in multiple places at once. So can you talk about the volunteer recruitment effort that we have going?
Absolutely. Volunteers are at the heartbeat of any philanthropic organization, and as well as any church organization, as well as any political campaign. Volunteers. It always expresses the goodwill of the people for causes of good. And everyone that will volunteer for this campaign, it's a cause for good. It's a cause for good. I'm not a perfect candidate, but I'm certainly a better one, and I'm a better choice. Nothing in me does not believe that. And I can show you better than I can tell you that I'm a better choice. But it's not just me. It's the volunteers, the goodwill of people that say, you know what? Yeah, I'm on a fixed income, so I don't have a whole lot of extra money to give, but I can give $5, but I can phone bank for 2 hours a week to call to make sure that voters are registered to vote. Part of phone banking, I think people get that mixed up. I'm not calling somebody to tell them about this guy. Well, it's not just calling to tell them about this guy. There are other phone banking efforts to make sure that people are registered to vote, to make sure that closer to election that they actually go vote, to make sure that their addresses are updated and whatnot. There are a number of things that just picking up the phone from the comfort of your home for 45 minutes, an hour, 2 hours. There are folks that are more on the active list. You know, I walk every weekend. Okay, well, let's add a little pep to your step. Give you a couple of these yard signs or door hangers. And while you're walking, just stop and door hang or pass out a pamphlet or a flyer or something. There's a bunch of ways at our events, set up and break down crews and teams and stuff. There are several opportunities, and they're so rewarding. So rewarding. Because you know you've made a difference, and we need it. We need it. And it's the heartbeat of what we do. And so again, the website, I keep referring everybody to the website. That's where the stuff is. There's a volunteer button on there, or you can even keep up with the campaign, you know, where you can become a part of it. And again, KwesiSmithForCongress.com, you can register to volunteer. They're needed. Petition circulators and signers and putting out signs and phone banking and setting up and breaking down at events. And there are several opportunities. And again, it's very rewarding.
Yes, and we want to make sure that we have volunteers all over the district. Absolutely. So the location is less important than just the effort that we need. Sure. Throughout the 9th. Yeah. So we're going to wrap up now, but so let's get some final thoughts as to sort of the introduction of Kwesi Smith and what that looks like as far as a 2024 congressional run.
What I would say to you and to the voters that are watching this, if I didn't believe this, I wouldn't be doing it. The sacrifice is overwhelming. But if I didn't believe that there not only needs to be a change, but there must be a change. I wouldn't be doing it. And I firmly believe that I am a better choice for independents, for Democrats, for Republicans in this election. Everybody will get a chance to decide again 2 years after this. But for this election, if the choice is between Paul Gosar and Kwesi Smith, I'm a better choice. And some of the things that we have become disheartened with as voters on both sides, it will only be fixed if we set the standard. And we set the standard by our vote. We set the standard by saying there's some things that we will not compromise on and we will not cower down concerning. And I believe that this election is the stress test election. It's going to determine the heart of this nation, whether the heart of who we are can survive the political throes that we have been in. And so I'm listening. I need your support. I want to represent you. You know, people say, what are your ideas and your positions? Well, I could share those with you, but that's not what's most important. What's most important is your positions and your ideas, because I'm going to represent you. And I think if you give me the opportunity, I think I can make you proud of our district and the change that must happen in Washington. And so that's all I'm asking for, is the opportunity to prove that I'm a better choice. And I look forward to the journey with all of us. And I'm sure we'll be back here, you know, talking soon. At least I hope so. I like talking to you. So hopefully we can.
Well, we're definitely going to document this process. It has been fascinating so far to watch and to be a part of. So thank you for the opportunity. And thank you for sitting here with me today so that we could actually share this message with our viewers and our listeners. And we plan to do this on a regular basis. We're going to have some guest hosts come in so you can have some fruitful conversations. And also, I think it would be important to have some voters actually come in, and let's do some, you know, question and answer session so that you can actually get that information from them as well. So thank you for today, and we will see everyone very soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you for tuning in.